Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI, COVID Response Community Radio in Central Iowa. As of today, we have 1,145 cases in Iowa of positive COVID-19 with 27 deceased. In Story County, we have 6 cases tested positive. Polk County has 134. Marshall County has 15. Boone has 3. Hamilton County has 2. And Hardin County has 1. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, with my co-host Ann Kinzel with us via Zoom.
Thank you for listening in. Today we'll hear from Iowa Attorney General's office about scams and protections you need to know about at this time. And we'll get an update on what is happening with Cyride in Ames. So stay with us for the hour for important information helping us to navigate the time of COVID-19.
And we'll finish the hour with more heart-to-heart messages brought to you by Miss Anna Banana.
First, we're going to start out with a government update from Iowa House of Representatives member from Ames, Ross Wilburn. Ross, thanks for joining us.
Can you let us know where we're at with the governor's proclamations?
The governor did issue some more closures. I know that there was some clarification that had come for what some of the closures were going to be. Recall that this past week that the governor closed the parks, but she's still encouraging people to get outside. In fact, I was outside yesterday and went for a bike ride and saw quite a few Iowans out there, folks here in Ames, and they were doing a good job of keeping the social distancing in general. I did cut through campus town area and came up on some of where the fraternities and sororities are. There were quite a few who were laying out in the sun, and they weren't doing quite so good a job of social distancing. So I want to make sure those Iowa State students that are here in town that you are paying attention to the social distancing to keep the physical distance. And I think maybe that might be a better term to try and get them to make sure that we are keeping the physical separation. So, because recall, you may not feel sick, but you may be a carrier of the coronavirus. And so I want to encourage them to start paying attention to that.
Speaking of which, Ross, what are you hearing in terms of testing availability in Iowa?
Not much more than what the governor said. They are continuing to try to add to the testing. My big concern is for the equipment to keep our healthcare providers safe. I had received some reports, not here in Ames, but in a couple other parts of Iowa, where some of our nursing assistants, some of our nurses, we're having to reuse some of the mask. And so, again, if you're someone that has purchased some of the medical grade equipment to, you know, contact a hospital or nursing home to find out if they are in need of that equipment. And if they are, ask them what would be a good way for you to get that to them. If you're not a medical person, healthcare provider who needs that equipment, that we can help keep each other safe, in addition to the physical distancing, to prepare and make your own mask. In fact, I've got bandanas that I use with some of my daughters. I still had some old ponytail holders for my daughter when she was visiting last year that I used to construct my own face cover.
COVID brings out the MacGyver in you, Ross.
Exactly, exactly. I used to be in the military, and we called it the field expedient method, but a MacGyver may work for a lot of folks who weren't in the military.
Well, we're certainly seeing a lot of field expediency across the country. This morning, I heard that the federal stockpile of PPE is now essentially down to zero. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to put that field expediency to use.
You know, and looking forward to once we've made it through this first wave, I will be interested to hear what the governor's plans are in terms of readiness going forward, because there are times when a crisis isn't necessarily directly in front of us where we relax a little bit. And that's the time when you want to be getting yourself, when you want to be getting the state prepared for the next round should this come back reoccur. And they anticipate, as far as I know, still that there will be another peak. And so where are the places that we can make sure that we're getting the medical grade PPEs? A lot of folks have been making the masks, the protective covers for just general civilian use. Who are some of those? How can we start identifying places, get those in the mail, get those places for people to purchase? In other words, the plan for when this or some other unfortunate pandemic were to occur, then people know where to go to get what materials, and some of those producers know that, okay, now we have to shift so that we can start getting this material, so we don't find ourselves in a situation where we are short of equipment. I think readiness moving forward will be important, that I'll be passing those forward and discussing with folks in the House. But I'll be interested to hear what the governor and her staff have planned for moving away, if they've had time to breathe from just trying to catch up here. It does cost money to get these things done, but that's where you have to make a decision, or a hard decision sometimes, as to how much in reserve are we going to have. One thing I did want to mention is that there is an additional $20 million for small business relief in the Small Business Relief Fund. And those who've listened before know that that's available through the Iowa Economic Development Authority, IDEA. So that's a total of $24 million. So if you do have a small business, now you want to make sure you check with the Economic Development Authority.
Is that different than the CARES funding from Congress?
That is from the CARES Act. We got a little bit more than we had anticipated.
So this is additional funding that has showed up since the original Payroll Protection Act?
That's correct.
You're saying for this money, they should go to the Iowa Economic Development Authority?
Contact them to see if you are eligible.
Tuesday, Dan Culhane suggested that people work closely with their banker, that the bankers mm-hmm. had a good take on this, and one of the first things to do for a small business was to connect with their banker and start the process with them. The bankers had a lot of good information overall
right.
about the sources of assistance.
Yeah, and that's good. They've taken that initiative to make sure that they are eligible and that they're connected with the bank as well.
Okay, well, thank you, Ross. Any parting words before you go?
Let's take care of ourselves so that we can help take care of others, wash our hands, clean services. I know a lot of folks have been trying to help out some of our local restaurants here, ordering out. In fact, I may treat myself and order out for supper tonight to get a little barbecue, but disinfect the wrappings that come through. When you go to the grocery store, make sure that you wash your fruit off. If there's any canned goods, wipe them off with a disinfectant. These are the things we can control. These are things that we can do. There are things that we are doing. And again, just a shout out to folks that are at the grocery stores and folks that are in some older Iowan care or senior facilities, folks that are doing child care. Let's continue doing the things that we know we can do and that we're doing together to help us flatten the curve to get through this. We can do it. It's just gonna take a lot of work. We're gonna continue to do this. This is projected to be these next 2 weeks, or this week and the next week are supposed to be some of the tougher chance where we start to see some of the more cases coming through. Let's just try and continue to take care of each other and move forward.
Okay. Thank you, Ross. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you bet. Thank you.
That's the Jupiter by Gustav Holst, performed by the Quarantine Harp Trio, three harpists that are happily quarantined together with harps in California, Tamara Mead, Kirsten Mead, and Krista Stevens. And this is Local Talk on KHOI, COVID Response Radio. I'm one of your hosts for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Ann Kinzel, co-hosting via Zoom. Times of crisis are times when it behooves us to show generosity and empathy for our neighbors. However, crises also attract their share of schemes that pop up to take advantage of the situation, and the COVID-19 crisis is no different. In fact, according to the Attorney General's office, we are seeing an unprecedented amount of unusual schemes and price gouging going on. I spoke 2 days ago with Lynn Hicks, and I asked him to describe a little bit what is going on. Lynn Hicks is the communications director for the Attorney General, Tom Miller's office. Here's what Lynn had to say. Has your office been busy?
We have been very busy, yes. This is a very uncertain, confusing times. Consumer Protection Division is very busy. We continue to be open. We're not taking visitors, but we're doing everything we usually do for state government and fielding complaints and questions from consumers.
What are the main source of complaints?
We're getting a lot of price gouging complaints, and they involve retail stores, suppliers, online sites.
Recently, I was looking online, and I saw a website that was selling face masks, and they were charging $40 a mask. And I thought to myself, I have no idea if this is a fair price or not.
I don't know what kind of masks those were, but, you know, the N95 masks that are recommended for healthcare professionals are not $40. Now, you know, there's been a disruption in the supply chain, and they're probably higher costs. You know, I had some research online about what typical costs are for those. You should be able to see that, yeah, that's an excessive price. Typically, before all this happened, our healthcare providers are telling us that they were paying less than a dollar a mask, and now the costs they see are $6-$7 a mask or even more.
Mm-hmm.
The governor disaster declaration a few weeks ago triggers the state's price gouging rule, and that's defined as excessive prices for goods or services needed by victims of disasters. So it has to be something that's necessary for consumers, such as food, water, medicines, utilities, building materials, things like that. And so this rule applies to any seller, retail and wholesale, and it also applies to someone who might have been hoarding toilet paper or hand sanitizer and wants to sell it for a lot of money on eBay or Facebook Marketplace or something like that, and social media.
So say one of these people is an entrepreneurial person who saw this crisis coming and went and bought a whole lot of toilet paper or a whole lot of hand sanitizer and now is making money off of it. Is that person actually breaking a law? Can you actually stop them from doing that?
Yeah. Again, if it's an excessive price for a good or services that are needed by victims, if it meets that standpoint, yes, they are violating the rule.
And toilet paper and hand sanitizer qualifies as that,
yeah,
in this case?
We believe those are necessary goods, along with soap, hand sanitizer, alcohol are considered effective in the disease. We're also seeing the medical supplies, masks and respirators, things like that. So those are the things that we're most concerned about. And I should point out here that under the rule, an excessive price is one that's not justified by the seller's actual cost of acquiring, producing, selling, transporting, and delivering the product sold, plus a reasonable profit. So in other words, if a seller can show that the prices have gone up for what they're selling, you know, they can charge more. So there's leeway here. What we're really concerned about is people who have bought these, as you, your example, went and bought a bunch of toilet paper or whatever, storing it in their basement and putting it online at, you know, a ridiculous price. So we're trying to put a stop to that. We're also hearing from medical professionals and hospitals and et cetera that they're paying 6 times, 7 times or more the cost for masks, vital medical supplies. So we're looking into that, and if we see that there is excessive prices put on that, we'll also pursue legal action. For example, we've got investigators who are scouring social media. We've got people who email our office and say, hey, look at this post. So we'll go on there and we'll post a warning about this, and we'll send cease and desist letters to people who are clearly price gouging. And if people refuse to comply, we'll consider further legal action.
Do you have a sense of who people are that are doing this on Facebook and eBay?
There are various people doing it, but it seems to be a lot of people who are hoarding anything from toilet paper to medical supplies to isopropyl alcohol. So in some cases, it might just be one person with one post, but we may also be seeing people who seem to have a lot of supplies, and we are pursuing those people, making sure they're taking down those posts. So we're getting the word out what this rule is about. We've joined together with other attorneys general across the country to send a letter to Amazon, Facebook, eBay, Walmart, and Craigslist, and ask them to more rigorously monitor online sellers and not only to take down these posts, but be a little more proactive so they can see when they have some of these hoarders and price gougers. They are telling us they are taking those down, and they are also sending us the names of people who appear to be in violation.
So thinking about scams as well as price gouging, are you finding that people are making false claims in selling products?
There's all kinds of scams going on right now. There's been advertisements out there for treatments that have not been approved. There's been at-home kits to test whether you have COVID-19. The FDA has not approved any at-home tests. In many cases, the federal authorities have cracked down on that. But I think all of those things are a concern. You know, we're seeing, you know, any kind of scam that you can imagine is going on. And, you know, scammers follow the headlines. Scammers thrive on fear and confusion. So we have heard of calls and emails that people have received. You know, one was supposedly from Iowa Department of Public Health, and they were asking for credit card information. Public health doesn't do that. You know, there's others out there that claim that, you know, you need to sign up for your benefit check as part of the stimulus and asking for Social Security number or bank account information. Again, a government agency is not going to do that. So in general, all of the usual cautions apply about when you get a phone call or when you get an email, to be very careful about how you respond, not click on anything, and be very careful about giving out personal information. If there's anything in doubt, just go to the site, go to CDC or WHO or Iowa Department of Public Health instead of clicking on those links. We're also hearing about charity scams, some other things like that. You know, thankfully, we're not hearing a lot of Iowans calling us about this. We know that they are seeing the scams. We're just hoping that they are, you know, not being victimized by it.
Now, Lynn, can you give me a sense of how many calls you get about price gouging?
Well, since all this began, we've gotten well over 70 formal complaints. In other words, somebody has filled out our consumer complaint form, and more than 200 informal complaints where people have just called or emailed us to say, look at this price. So we are very busy sorting through those complaints. That's what we've received. Typically, we don't get that many calls about price gouging. And as I said, the price gouging rule goes into effect when there's a disaster declaration. And, you know, typically this is what happens is a localized disaster like a flooding or a tornado. And, of course, last year we had lots of these declarations across the state with flooding. And we got a few complaints about price gouging, but nothing like this.
So this is unusual.
It really is an unusual situation because it affects so many people. And the price gouging that we typically see in those situations have to do with people rebuilding. And so we'll see contractors come in from out of state wanting to offer their rebuilding services, home contracting services, roofing, that sort of thing, and jacking up the price of their services or their materials. And you hear about some of that, but nothing like this, nothing like the kind of products across all sorts of stores and online.
So it's business. The diversity of possibilities plus the intensity of the desperation resulted in a much bigger amount than usual.
Yeah, the widespread nature of it as well, too. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. exactly right.
And the widespread nature of it.
And I should say that in most cases, sellers that we reach out to have been cooperative. They have changed their prices or taken down their listings. And there are some suppliers who've explained that they're facing more costs, so they're simply passing on those costs. So, you know, we're being reasonable. We're working with them.
So if they back down, they don't get a fine.
If they back down, no. I mean, there's no reason to pursue it. But if we see somebody persisting, what will happen is we will warn them. If it comes to it, we will file a lawsuit because this is a civil violation. And so if a judge finds that they were in violation, they could face civil penalties of up to $40,000 per violation. I did mention that some of these we've gotten formal complaints, and we have created a new complaint form specifically for price gouging because we wanted to make sure people were answering all the questions and giving as many details as possible. That just helps our investigators. So if you go to on our website, which is iowaattorneygeneral.gov, you can find the complaint form, the regular complaint form, and the price gouging complaint form. You know, it really helps us, too, if somebody sees something, take a picture of it and attach that, or do a screen grab of what you see online, or send us the URL. All of those things will help us react to this quicker.
Thank you. And give that website again?
iowaattorneygeneral.gov. And call us. The phone number, toll-free number is 888-777-4590.
888-777-4590.
That's correct.
And if they go to your website, there's a obvious link to the section where they can file a complaint?
Yeah. The top of the website, you'll see a headline about the new consumer complaint form. They can just click on that. Also, if they go to For Consumers or to file a complaint. So there's about three or four different places on our homepage that they can get the complaint form, yeah.
Now, another area of concern is foreclosures.
The good news is that as part of the governor's emergency proclamations, she's put up foreclosures and evictions on hold. So your lender or your landlord can't go forward with those actions. You know, a lot of people are going through some economic difficulties right now. So those provide relief. And there's a lot of other actions out there that either the state or federal government has done. And so we're just trying to remind people about their rights. If you owe student loans, make sure you check that out because some of the federal student loans you don't have to pay right now and your interest will not accrue. Now, that doesn't apply to private loans, so that's why you need to check with your private lender. And in some cases, with mortgages, if you're in economic distress, you can seek forbearance on your mortgage. And again, some private lenders are also doing some programs on that. So consumers should know about some of the assistance that's out there for people who are potentially in economic difficulties right now.
So say I was having trouble paying my mortgage right now, and I want to find out what kind of protection I have. Where would I find that assistance? Or if I wanted to make sure, say I have a student loan, and would I have to fill out some paperwork? Or how would I know what my protections are and how to go about really getting them?
Well, it really varies by lender, and so your best bet is to reach out to the lender. A lot of the lenders are not requiring extensive proof that you are laid off or have loss of income and things like that. So it's just going to vary to see what they offer. If you're having difficulty getting any answers or satisfaction, that's something you should call our office. Iowa Legal Aid can also help you in those situations as well. And as far as their federal student loans, you should be fine. Go to the Department of Education website, studentaid.gov, regarding the student loans. There's more information on what's happening there.
Okay. And with protections for mortgage or evictions?
Evictions and foreclosures have been stayed in Iowa as part of the governor's emergency order.
And where would one find information about that to kind of arm oneself?
The Office of the Governor's website has all the proclamations that she's issued.
Okay.
But, can I add one more thing? You know, we're trying to do what we can from the legal side. You know, I talked a lot about some of the legal relief for consumers and that sort of thing. But Attorney General Miller he's also really urging people to be compassionate in this time, whether you're an employer, a lender, a landlord, and just to realize that there are a lot of people going through some very tough times right now, and just to show some compassion and do as much as you can to help people out. Would love that sort of compassion and cooperation, because we're all in this together.
Okay, thank you very much. Lynn Hicks, Communications Director for Attorney General Tom Miller's office, speaking about some of the, you know, darker side of crisis. It occurred to me, listening to what he had to say again, that the phenomenon of the toilet paper and the hand sanitizers disappearing so quickly from the stores was a result not only of people rushing to stores, but also of people stockpiling for financial gain. And I hadn't quite registered that until I was listening to Lynn Hicks talking. So it's you know, it's interesting to know what happens at times like these. Thanks again to Lynn for sharing that information with us. And that was another version of Jupiter by Gustav Holst, as performed by the Silicon Valley chapter of the American Harp Society in San Jose, California. And we send all our best to San Jose, California, where our own Dennis Hart is staying. Barbara Neal is the director of CyRite, and she's joined us via Zoom. Let's talk. Barbara, what kind of short-term challenges is CyRite facing during this crisis?
Well, I think like everybody, this last few weeks really have been a whirlwind as we kind of grapple with COVID-19 and how it's changing our communities, our workplace, and our personal lives. And so, of course, CyRite hasn't been spared any of that. But I really think what we've been focusing on, our top priority, is really protecting our passengers. So we've taken a lot of steps to try to do that. So we are daily disinfecting our buses and facilities, and we kind of continue to refine that process. And so currently the buses are being disinfected out about four times a day.
Can you describe a little bit what actually happens when you disinfect a bus?
Sure. So we have purchased what are called static disinfectant sprayers. So as you use those, so we're using chemicals, it's a hydrogen peroxide based chemical that's approved by the CDC, but the static causes it to wrap around all the stanchions and things like that. So it's more effective than just wiping it down. So we were fortunate enough to get those before this became the pandemic that it is right now. So we've pushed out on social media a lot of our cleaning processes and how we're sanitizing the buses and what it looks like.
You're showing videos of how you do it, or?
Yeah, so we have videos out on our website that show us disinfecting the buses, what they look like. We have, like I said, three of those static disinfectants and sprayers is what they really are, two backpack ones and kind of one that's like a handheld. And then we also have crews that are going out with washcloths and stuff, wiping down the buses. The disinfectant that we're using, like I said, is safe, but it is supposed to kill the COVID-19 virus within 45 seconds.
So you walk through the bus and you just spray everything in the bus?
Yep, that's exactly right. And we're spraying in all of our offices like that. It's approved by the CDC, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but it has basically a peroxide base, so it's safe and doesn't bleach anything or cause damage to our equipment or the wood on our facilities.
And how are you dealing with the social distancing issue in the bus?
Well, we have suspended our fare collection, and all passengers are being asked to enter and exit through the rear of the bus. You're limiting your contact between the driver and the passenger. Other ways we've encouraged social distancing is we have put, and we just recently did this, we have like a plastic chain that we're putting between the driver and the seating area so that people understand how far to seat themselves away from the driver. I should say buses in design are kind of facilitate social distancing, so the distance from the driver's seat to the first seat of the buses that we're using is over 6 feet. So that helps, but we actually put this chain so it's a little over 10 feet now. We've also reduced the seating capacity on the bus by about 50% by putting signs that tell people not to sit in this seat and remind them about social distancing and how important it is to really kind of start to flatten that curve.
With the students gone, is it easier to practice that kind of thing?
Excellent question. Yes, it is. It is a lot easier. I have to say, I think the message being pushed out that we all know is to limit the spread of COVID-19. We really need to stay home. And thankfully, many of the people in our community are following that recommendation, or at least from our experience. But SciRide's ridership has dramatically dropped due to this pandemic. We carry typically about 33,000 passengers a day, and we're down to less than 1,000 passengers a day. We recently started using some technology to tally our passengers, some technology that we don't have fully vetted yet, but we figure with so few of us, it's a good time to use it to tell us where people are boarding at. So we have a better sense if we do have to cut back to additional services, we know. So this map kind of shows us where people are boarding. And I think based on what we're seeing, while preliminary, it really illustrates that SciRide is kind of getting to those critical access points like grocery stores, the hospital area, essential kind of services within the community.
This change in usership, does it affect your bottom line at all? Is it a financial issue, or does it not really make any difference?
That's an excellent question. It will affect our financial situation. At this point, our fares are already set. A majority of our funding comes from the students at Iowa State, the administration at Iowa State, and then the city of Ames. SciRide has been fortunate. The Federal Transit Administration announced on April 2nd that part of the CARES Act will go to public transportation to help us, because we all know this is going to have a long-term impact and effect, So we're learning a lot about the CARES Act, but SciRide will receive some direct funding to help us maintain, and in the future, I guess maybe more what things are affected as far as like revenues, things like that. Right now, we're able to put out the service we told people we would. We have scaled back a little bit. We're running a weekday break schedule because we don't have the ridership. But one of the things I didn't mention is that if a bus has more than 9 on it, we do send out another bus to kind of create that social distancing as well. So we haven't reduced our services anymore because people still are riding to some of those essential places, and we don't want to overload the buses with more than 9 people.
So how is a weekday different than a regular schedule?
I knew you'd ask me that. And of course, I'm sitting at home, so it's a little difficult to tell you exactly. But
In general.
So it's the majority of our essential routes that we run. So the red, the brown, the green, the blue. But we did add one additional route, which is our cherry route that normally would not operate during a weekday break schedule. And the cherry route is the one that goes clear out to West Ames, out to Poe. So kind of by County Line Road out there, there's really no easy way for people to get on. They'd have to walk a long distance if they had to get to a grocery store or something like that. So we're adding service out there. And based on that heat map or ridership that I was telling you, it does look like we have a significant is all relative now, but a significant number of people boarding in that Poe area.
It's exciting to hear that you're able to respond to that kind of need at this time. Barbara, I was wondering, what's the most important thing SciRide has learned in this situation?
That's hard. I don't know if it's the most important thing. That's a hard question for me to answer, but I feel like safety has always been a priority at SciRide. It's always been one of our main priorities. And I think I'm proud of what everybody's done, our entire team. And I think that we've really kind of banded together and worked well. I mean, getting PPE equipment is not easy, stuff like that. We've reached out to community partners like Iowa State and the City of Ames, and they've been able to help us get the stuff necessary for our drivers. We don't have, obviously, surgical mask or anything like that, but just hand sanitizer, the chemicals we need to clean the buses. So I think the thing I'm maybe most proud of is how we've all worked together and kind of risen to the occasion, which, you know, it speaks highly, I think, about everybody. And I think everybody in general has really done that. So I think that would be my answer, I guess.
Barbara, are there any plans and things in the works that are not related right now to the crisis that are just a part of the SciRide operation being developed in general?
Well, I'll be honest, I seem to spend many hours every day working with COVID-19, so I'm not even sure I know the answer to that anymore.
Wow.
You know, we were facing some revenue challenges prior to this. I mean, those are still going to obviously happen when this crisis is over, and it will eventually be over, you know. So, but hopefully with having some access to additional fundings that will help SciRide to continue to provide the service to the community that we've provided.
So it doesn't sound like you're concerned that this current crisis is going to in some way affect SciRide in the long run that puts it at risk, that you feel confident?
Oh, well, I don't know if I feel confident, and I'm not worried about risk at all. I think that SciRide's always been an important part of the city and the community. So I think we'll continue. At least my hope is that we will continue to be an important part. I think things will struggle for a while. I think all of our partners will struggle for a while for this. And I think, you know, if we just all continue to work together, that's really the best approach. The hope is that SciRide isn't required or doesn't have to cut services to ultimately handle the financial impact that this pandemic has caused. But I mean, nobody really knows the extent of the revenue losses or the expenses that are going to be incurred by anybody.
Okay. Well, thank you for informing us about this very precious public service.
Hey, if I could just jump in for a minute.
Sure. Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for Ames.
SciRide has been an important partner in promoting census, filling out your census forms. There are a lot of students that ride SciRide, and we had always used that in the past. We've had to kind of rearrange and reevaluate was that we had in 2010 had a census event at SciRide Stops. We were planning to do that right before Census Day this year, and that got sidetracked. So we are continuing to do the outreach to students, and I'm happy to be able to come on your show each morning and just remind people those census forms still need to be returned. We don't have the methods of communication we've had in the past, like using the transit system to remind people, hey, fill out your census form, because they're frankly not physically there anymore. But things like radio and digital are still there. And we know that there are people listening. And this is just your reminder. If you have not completed your census form, please do so. It's easy to fill out. 2020census.gov will take you to a link. You don't have to have an invitation. Do is know your address and some basic information, and you can get that done within just a few minutes.
Thank you, both of you, for joining us, and appreciate the information you're giving us.
Phenology is writing down nature's happenings when they occur for future reference and comparisons from year to year, the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology is about tree sap. A delightful stirring of spring is occurring even as we speak. As buds are swelling on trees in our yards, sap is coursing through the passageways of the tree. Think of these passageways, called xylem and phloem tubes, as the arteries and veins, like in our bodies. Sap is the blood of the tree, filled with nutrients and minerals. It carries vital energy out into the branches when new buds are forming in springtime. Sap flows through a part of the outer tree trunk known as sapwood. Phloem is the sticky, sugary stuff we tend to come into contact with. This is made up of the sugars created by photosynthesis, which is then fed back into the tree and leaves as much-needed food during the growth period. Daytime temperatures in the plus 40s and nighttime temperatures below freezing are ideal for sap movement in trees. Some trees produce bitter or even poisonous sap. Plus, even edible sap licked directly from the tree is not very tasty. However, when the next time you drizzle maple syrup on your waffles, just remember that it comes from tree sap. The sugar maple, its sap has a sugar content of up to 2%, and they make a lot of it. It is tapped in late winter and early spring, with a healthy, good-sized tree producing as much as 15 gallons of heavenly sweetness. On average, it takes about 40 gallons of sap to make just 1 gallon of delicious syrup. As well as maples, there are a few other trees that produce edible sap. The sap of many birch trees is also very nutritious. While it's low on sugar, it's a great source of minerals and natural antioxidants. Tapping a tree does create a wound, but it is a wound from which the tree can readily recover and does not endanger the health of the tree. Commercial syrup producers are able to tap trees for decades without adversely affecting the health of the tree. The aforementioned uses of tree sap are undoubtedly positive. However, our other interactions with it might not be so much fun. Often the reason we encounter sap on the outside of a tree is because something is wrong. Leaking sap on the bark can be a sign of disease, pests, or damage. However, the tree's own sap can often serve as an effective defensive mechanism. From your point of view, sap can either be a nuisance or a delicious treat, but to your trees, it's vital. Look out for unusual leaks and consider sap activity when deciding when to trim. And if you have a maple on your property, read up on how to tap it. If you have trees, you're going to have sap, so make the most of it. Tree resin, also known as pitch, is thicker, tackier, and darker than tree sap. Deciduous trees do not make resin. It is only produced by trees that belong to the pine, fir, or cedar family. Resin forms in the outer cells of the trees, also known as the inner and outer bark. Outer bark is also known as the phloem. You can make a cut into a resin-producing tree and see the resin ooze out of the bark. The resin is meant to work like a scab. It closes up the wound and protects it from outer elements while it heals. Resin is sticky and clear and composed differently than tree sap. It is composed of compounds secreted by or deposited in the tree and sometimes contain high levels of chemical properties. For this reason, it is used for a variety of commercial and industrial applications. Maple syrup is not one of them. Resin is used to manufacture commodities like ink, lacquer, varnish, jewelry, perfume, and many other commercial products. Pine resin, or as some call it, pitch, can be chewed like gum, and Native Americans routinely chewed and consumed the resin for its antibacterial properties and for joint pain. Native Americans use resin to make the inner workings of their ceremonial whistles. And that's our phonology of tree sap this time of year. Theme music is John Barleycorn Must Die by Traffic. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI. Become a member or find the donate button at our website, khoifm.org.
And we are at that point where I think Anna Banana is going to join us. Anna Banana, are you there?
Yes, it is Anna Banana with KHOI Heart to Heart Messages to connect you to love, comfort, and your community. So our first Heart to Heart message is from Lisa Peterson, who serves as the Area Director of Marketing and Admissions for Akira Healthcare. In preparing for today's segment, I visited their website, which states, like many in your care facilities, the following. Due to COVID-19, we're taking extra caution to protect our residents. At this time, no visitors are allowed in the facilities. So this is happening just as Representative Wilburn was saying, that there are many senior care facilities and medical facilities that are asking that residents or patients not have visitors, which is particularly difficult. So then that caused me to go and visit their Facebook page, Akira's Facebook page. And I was so moved by the videos and pictures that they have posted of how they are dealing with these changes. I love seeing how the Akira residents were keeping their spirits up by posting messages on these whiteboards. And there's an adorable gentleman who's sporting an Iowa State shirt that had a sign that confessed that he had dressed up like a ninja and TP'd the therapy room last night. He's a cutie. And then there's a particularly sassy looking lady with these super cool lime green nail polish nails who had a sign that read, "I tried to think of something funny to put here, but they told me not to swear." And those two signs made me laugh out loud. There's also a video of a family that's standing outside the window of a resident named Dorothy. They're holding up and waving signs as they all sang happy birthday to their grandmother. And I'm guessing they had hoped to be in the same space with the birthday cake, presents, and streamers, but they found a way to celebrate in spite of being asked to keep their distance. You know, this video reminded me of the message in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, of how Christmas still comes without ribbons, tags, packages, boxes, or bags. And today, our Grinch is COVID-19. And COVID-19 can take away those normal frills of a celebration, but it can't take away the love. And the love this family has for their grandmother was quite evident. So as I scroll through their page, I can certainly understand why Lisa sent her heart-to-heart message, which is, I just wanted to give a shout out to all the hardworking folks on the front lines at Akira Healthcare, including administrators, nursing, CNAs, therapy, environmental, kitchen, and activities. They truly are heroes taking care of your loved ones this day and every day. Akira Healthcare Partners and Care Family for Life. So thank you, Lisa, for sharing with us the love and care that is taking place at 3440 Grand Avenue. Now, Akira is near the North Grand Mall and the Restore and Habitat for Humanity's headquarters. And I find myself these days quite exasperated that I couldn't run my normal shopping errands. Dropping Floyd off at the dog groomers, which he definitely needs because he's getting quite shaggy. Getting a pedicure, which, holy smokes, nails and hair for me not looking so great. A run to Indianola where my dad is. A drive back to Ames, get a pedicure again, run to the office. Needing and wanting to be on the go, go, go to get things done, done, done. But then a PEO chapter HN member, Lois Slope, sent a heart-to-heart message, and I took a breath. And as I read it, and I hope you will as well as you hear what Lois has to say, we must appreciate the conditions that are requiring us to be still. Do not spoil these quiet hours by wishing them away, waiting impatiently to be active again. This quiet time for reflection can be one of the best teachers and life lessons. Adverse circumstances can become growth opportunities when you affirm your trust in God. God will not let go of our hands and will transform our trials into blessings. So thank you, Lois. What a beautiful message that reminds us to find peace and lessons in the stillness. And it also reminded me of a quote by Deepak Chopra, who writes, "In the midst of movement and chaos, keep stillness inside of you." This also reminded me when I was a kid and complained about being bored, my dad's favorite way to respond to that was that boredom was a luxury. And if I was bored, consider myself to be one lucky person. So I think collectively, as we're staying at home, if we're bored, we should consider ourselves lucky, as boredom is indeed a luxury. So that brings me to a heart-to-heart message from Kath Rathbone in Fayetteville, North Carolina. She also offers advice for what can be done in days where we've been forced to change our routines. And her heart-to-heart message, which is, keep doing your everyday chores and find three simple things to be grateful every day. Share them with someone else and try not to get sucked into negative conversations. Instead, take a walk outside every day and notice all the tiniest little things that are beginning to burst open and those that are still growing. Well, I certainly can find three things to be grateful, and I share those with you over these past couple of days. What are the three things? Sunshine, daffodils, and KHOI. So that's positive. But I confess that I've been sucked into negative conversations with myself, because I will tell you that your Anna Banana is seeking comfort in bags of chips and tubs of ice cream these days. And I know that this dramatic increase in my salt and sugar intake has forced me into wearing sweatpants with an extra wide elastic wide waistband. It has also resulted in some pretty negative self-talk, as I feel the muffin top turn into the size of a wading pool sitting around my waist. Not pretty, people. And then I engage in this negative self-talk about how I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, and gosh darn it, people don't like me. And this is because I have too much time to think about me, me, me. So then I received this lovely heart-to-heart message from Faith Winchester, a member and leader of the Mindfulness and Meditation Group at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Ames, to snap out of it. So she shares this passage by Joseph Goldstein, an Insight Meditation Workbook. One of the functions of meditation is to bring us this understanding. After a while, we begin to see that everything we think of as me is insubstantial and impermanent. The pain in my knee, my anger at a friend or coworker, my dinner plans, none of these is me. In fact, nothing I experience lasts long enough to qualify as a solid, consistent self. I begin to realize that this entity I've called myself is nothing more than a mental construct. It's actually quite a relief to come to this understanding. Imagine if you were really everything you thought and felt. Yikes. One of the natural laws that we seek to see clearly is the selfless nature of all of our experience. So thank you, Faith, Kath, Lois, and Lisa, for these heart-to-heart messages that have expressed appreciation and admiration for those serving others, for making sure you take a pause, however best suits you, through meditation, I guess, and caring for others. So if you would like to respond to any of these messages, I invite you to text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. Or if you have a heart-to-heart message that you would like read on air, you can not only text me at 515-809-0077, you can also email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart-to-heart in the subject line, just as Faith did. Thank you so much, Faith. All of us at KHOI hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, we again thank you for listening and send out our love to each of you.
Thank you, Anna Banana. And as the Swiss government motto says, we live more slowly now, but we live. And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening.
And I've been your other host, Ann Kinstel. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard two renditions of Jupiter by Gustav Holst.
And remember, please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Keep sending us your messages, keep listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.